everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. How are you today? I'm sitting here in Monte Sereno, California. It's a lovely day. I'm looking out the window. I see squirrels romping around, crawling up on trees. And it's a nice, peaceful image, although I'm not really feeling very peaceful inside because of everything that's going on in the world today. But it's good to take a moment to see the good, focus on it a little bit, and then work on expanding it to a larger space all around us. So one of the good things we're going to talk about today is traveling and sharing our ideas with people around the world. And I have a wonderful guest who's going to be telling us about her travels recently to Kuwait and surrounding areas. I have my guest, Linda Long. She's a dear friend, and she's the author of two books. We've talked about both of them here on It's All About Food: Great Chefs Cook Vegan, which was groundbreaking at the time and still is, and her How to Be Vegan book, Virgin Vegan. Linda has a lifelong relationship with the food industry, starting as a waitress and short order cook at the age of 12 at her parents' truck stop in Pennsylvania, a home economist who taught high school foods in the early part of her career, and spending a decade in the resort hotel business. Linda's been a committed vegan for a long time. Welcome to It's All About Food, Linda. Thank you so much for taking the time today to talk with me.
Well, I'm happy to be on the phone with you thinking about California. It's snowing in New York City.
Yeah, I read about that. And it's, you know, it's not the California that everyone thinks of. It's a nice day today, but it's been cold and wet, which is a good thing because the water reservoirs and everywhere where people get their water from around here have now been, I think, sufficiently replenished.
Yes, I'm not sure how much we needed this in New York City, but it was pretty to look at. I think it stopped now, and of course, in New York, you know, it takes a real blizzard for it to remain on the sidewalk very long.
That's right. Yeah, so, I bet it's all gone by now.
It's all gone. It's all gone.
And it's been a pretty warm winter anyway.
It has, but I'm on the 10th floor, and it's lovely to look out sometimes across the building across from me has a line of pine trees. So, you know, the snow will settle on that, and I look down on their awning, which is a very pretty design. And then I'm right at the Hudson River, so, you know, I can see even though the snow disappears from the street, I can still see evidence of it, so. It's
evidence,
nice,
it's not an alternative fact. There was indeed snow in New York.
Right.
Okay. Well, you had a wonderful opportunity recently.
It makes you feel hot chocolate. I'm sorry. It makes you feel like making hot chocolate, you know.
Oh, nice. We'll get to that later. Okay. So you had a wonderful opportunity recently, and I want to hear all about it because, frankly, I haven't heard much about it. You filled up my WhatsApp for quite a long time while you were there with wonderful pictures and stories, and I just want to hear so much more about everything. So let's talk about the opportunity, how you got there.
Well, one of my dearest friends for a very, very long time, since the early 70s, became Sheikha Paula Al-Sabah, the wife of the oldest son of a former emir of Kuwait, Mubarak Al-Sabah. And we were all in our 20s living in the same building in Manhattan on 86th and 2nd, so that's how long we've known each other. And, of course, the years go by, and we all have our lives, and she eventually had six children and just had her 14th grandchild while I was visiting. So it was quite a fabulous time. It was right at the last week I was there. So born was little Gigi, who is with a full head of black hair that shocked everybody. And she hasn't lost any of it. I just saw updated photographs because I left there December 8th, and now my friend is in New York at her New York apartment, and she showed me some updated photos yesterday. So It was, you know, it's very much like family to be there, and but it's also quite luxurious and beautiful, and the palace they live in was designed by my friend. And so her touch is everywhere. Even when she lived in the New York apartment, it was, I could always see that she had a wonderful touch for interior design. And so I'm sure at the time she never thought that one day she would be building a palace, but she has. And it's she's always had the ability of doing things that are very, very elegant, yet so comfortable. You know, no matter how beautiful it is, you still feel like you could take your shoes off and just kick back. So that's a wonderful decorating point of view, I think, to have.
Yeah, wow, I loved all the pictures.
Well, you were in the New York apartment, so
yes,
you know.
Yes, I was. Very fun, very colorful, very comfortable, you're right. Now let's talk about why you were there giving vegan classes.
Well, when she was in visiting, we all got together to cook in her apartment, and then later on, she's been vegan a long time, and she just came up with the idea. It just kind of came out of nowhere. She just said to me, "Maybe you should come to Kuwait and teach some vegan cooking classes." And that's how it started. You know how many things like that start. It's just a moment of time and a thought burst, and and so she actually made it happen. I said, "Oh, I would love to." Plus, I had not seen any of her I saw some of her grandchildren who had visited New York, but only three or four of them. And so it was just a wonderful opportunity. So I started thinking about what classes I could teach, and she started thinking about where it could be held, and then she talked to her daughters there, one who is a trained chef herself, her fourth daughter, and trained in New York. So many people in Kuwait come here for high school and college, or part of high school, or at least college in New York, Boston, and then also London and Paris, and for many, many decades now. And so, they all speak English, and then of course Arabic as well. But it's very westernized there. So, and out of the 3.9 population, only about a third are Kuwaitis, and so the mixed element is quite big there. A lot of the workers are from India, but there's been so many executives, you know, for business. And so it was just so pleasant to have a thought germinate here and then really have it happen. So
absolutely.
I'm looking at
a map, and for those who aren't quite sure where Kuwait is, I just want to give you an image. It's a tiny little place, and it's right in the middle of Iraq and Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. Those are the countries that it borders, which we hear a lot about in the news these days.
Right. It is a small little country. Right on the Gulf. Our front yard was the
I said it was bordered with Qatar. It isn't, but it's that's
yeah.
After
I was going
the
to
water,
say I didn't think it, no. Mostly Iraq and Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And but it was wonderful to look out my room window and see the beach and the their private marina with some lovely boats, and the sunset coming up and the sunset going down on the Gulf, a truly, truly magnificent setting. So when I say it's right on the Gulf, it really is. It's right on the edge.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah. So
now you spent a lot of time preparing for your classes, I know, because I remember getting some of the emails. The first thing, I remember when I gave courses in Brazil at a vegetarian conference, one of my challenges that I didn't think of in advance was that they didn't have all the ingredients that I needed in my recipes. Mm-hmm. I imagine that happened to you.
The only thing that happened is that they had never heard of seitan or tempeh. Tofu was very common, and there were sources for even homemade tofu. But, and I had never made tempeh. I remember being down on the farm in Tennessee where Louise Hagler lives, and she was very well known in the beginning, especially of the beginning of the days, you know, 30 years ago and 40 years ago now. And I watched her make it, tempeh, in a plastic bag. And I thought, oh, you know, it's so simple. It just takes time. But, you know, we're so spoiled in New York. We can just buy anything everywhere. And so it just never seemed worth it to me to ever make it. But I wish I would have learned. That's the one thing I regret. I wish I would have learned how to make it, that I was actually making it myself, not remembering how I saw someone else do it 30 years ago. And because as soon as I discovered they didn't have it there and they never heard of it, then I was left with showing them a picture in my in Virgin Vegan, of which, can you believe, I taught 7 classes, and I didn't remember until the last class that I had a photograph of it in my book. And so I had to be describing what tempeh was. And, of course, seitan, I taught them how to make that, because Great. That's very simple to make. And then I found that our Bob's Red Mill products are available there at a superstore, well, supermarket chain called, Sultan Markets. And the granddaughter or the daughter, it might have been the daughter of one of the creators of these supermarkets, actually came to my classes. And, a lovely person. And then at night when I was in my room and I would start to think, oh, my goodness, I wonder where to get this. I wonder if they have it at the Sultan. So I always had everyone write their email down when they came into class. And so I thought, oh, let me text, you know, Yasmin Sultan. She'll tell me if it's in her family stores. And sure enough, she was such a great help one evening, especially. We had a lovely back and forth. But it was a pure delight. We had planned on 6 classes over the month of November, and it turned out that one class, there was only one person who signed up for it. And so what we learned early on, and we didn't know where to stick another class in, but so many of the households said, oh, well, I don't cook, but I would wish my cook could come. You know,
that's
because
funny.
They have, you know, all the major households have their own cooks. Mm-hmm. And and of course, the palace where I was staying is almost a hotel. It's run like a hotel. It has a huge kitchen staff. I think it's a 23-person staff for the palace. But I'm not quite sure exactly how many. Some are cooks, some are servers, some are, you know. We didn't know what to do because they didn't think that it would be a good idea to mix the cooks up with the other students for whatever reason. I didn't ask. And so when one person didn't, it was only one person signed up for the one class, they simply called her up and asked her if she would choose a different date so that we could use that slot for the cooks. And it turned out to be my favorite class because there were 10 signed to come, and it ended up being 9, I think. But they were so in tune. You know, I could do things so much faster and say so many things because I didn't have to tell them so many of the, well, you do this, you do this. You know, it was, they just knew already.
Mm-hmm.
And I made Miyoko's butter, and I had one of my helpers who didn't, well, he was Indian, and I guess he spoke English, but it was a dialect I didn't understand, and he could barely understand me, but we got along great, two of the young men for the month. And I had them put out the tray with everything to make the butter for the next day. And I had made that butter almost in every class because everyone was so shocked at how quickly with some coconut oil you could make butter.
Right.
That was just a great way to start.
And it's good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. And you can control the salt you put in it, and or no salt, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So it didn't turn out for the cook's class.
Oh, no.
This was about the fourth time I had made it in front of the classes. So I still to this day don't know why that didn't work out. The only thing I can think of is that maybe he used the virgin coconut oil and I was to use the refined. I don't know if that made a difference. But nonetheless, but you know, because it was the cook's class, they just laughed because they have tons of stuff that doesn't work out too, you know. And but they believe me that they really could make it. And so
Now the Indians, were they naturally vegetarian or did they eat and make everything?
No, they were not vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
No. But they were so enchanted on everything I made, and they were so eager to taste everything. In fact, when I left, I made sure that my two helpers had copies of each class recipes because they had worked so long and hard. I mean, sometimes we were there 10 and 12 hours a day, either prepping or shopping or setting up or teaching the class or breaking down and getting ready for the next. You know, people who don't do it don't understand how much time is involved in the the planning, the executing, and then the actual doing it. So they just were so wonderful in helping me set up demo trays, but they just hung on every word that I said. I mean, they really tried to understand me, I guess. But it was also wonderful that they're trained to be in service. And so, I mean, I barely finished with measuring spoons that one of them wasn't grabbing them from me and taking them to the sink, you know. I mean, it was phenomenal. They were so in tune with anything I needed. And when I was ready to have them serve samples of the food, maybe we had made it the day before, or maybe it was something we just made, they were just so efficient. I mean, it was a pure delight. And you really get to see how people are trained to be in these sorts of jobs. I mean, service jobs I'm always enchanted with because my family, you know, I grew up in a restaurant and I know what it's like to be a waitress and a short order cook in the kitchen. And I always think they're never paid enough. So I never care how much someone's being paid. I just know it's not enough.
Right. And it's not easy work.
Oh, it's tiresome, and your brain's got to be working every moment. You've got to be paying attention also to the thinking of whomever you're servicing and be, like, there, ready. It's a talent. It's a talent to be really good at it. It really is.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people can't do that work. Cannot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you made seitan. What else did you make? Butter,
well,
and what other dishes?
Okay, well, let me tell you the dishes that I made. I mean, the names of the classes might help you understand.
Right.
I decided to go luscious breakfasts and brunches. That was the first class. Now, some people came to every class or almost every class. Some people only came to one. Wanted to come to all of them, but because it's in the middle of the day, it was very difficult either with work or with children everyone is very busy. And all of the people have their own professional work. I did have a couple nutritionists come, which was wonderful. And they were only to come to one class. But then they were so enchanted, I think, where they learned a lot. And so they actually arranged to come to a second class, and I think their company was paying for them. But they were so lovely and just offered just wonderful information. Plus, I was using a convection oven, and I'd never used one before. I just never had access to a convection oven. And so I had a little chart, but when you're demoing, you don't want to stop and look at the chart. And for some reason, just in that moment, I couldn't remember how to put 350 and make it the convection temperatures. And one of the nutritionists was quick to tell me. It was, you know, I said, oh, thank you. So it was a very congenial feeling. So we did luscious breakfast and brunches. Then I did a flavorful burgers, sandwiches, and spreads. And I must share the burger recipe with you because it was such a huge hit that we ended up making it in the palace for some of the other dishes. We even had it as an option on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
At our big, they have a large glass table with a Lazy Susan in the middle. And they only have one meal a day prepared, and that's at 2:30. And on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, it is at the Palace, and anybody can come that they know. It's kind of a standing invitation, or whomever Mubarak might be meeting with that day who invite them to the Palace for lunch. So they always set up for at least 16 or 20 people, and they have about 50 dishes prepared every day. Yeah, and so, but the breakfast was brought to my room. I planned what I wanted, and they would bring the breakfast tray. I just called when I was ready for it. And then in the, you kind of took a mental note as to what the lunch dishes were, because there were so many choices, and you just didn't have everything, so that you might then tell your maid for the evening what you might like brought to your room. Or sometimes we were in this beautiful cinema, and they would just bring food. If whoever was in the cinema, we would just bring. Many times it was only Paula and me. They would bring, as we'd look at international CNN, and then we would also look at, movies. And so they'd just bring the food to the table, and we would just, we each had our individual little stand, you know, in front of us. So we would just get up and eat. But it was basically things that we, that were just eaten 2:30 to about 4 o'clock. And we always went outside by the swimming pool for the desserts. But then outside, they have a big rotunda beside the pool that is a big wooden Lazy Susan. And so we had Thanksgiving out there, and then you have a side buffet to boot besides all of that. It's just astounding, the beauty of eating there. And everyone is so friendly, and you just sit wherever you want. And they have so many children around. Fridays is always the family lunch. And with the 6 children now grown and all have children themselves, finally the youngest one had the first child when I was there, and the Gigi I mentioned. And so the children have a little side table, you know, very much like Thanksgiving in the United States. You put the children off to the side. But sometimes if they wanted to, they could sit at the big round wooden table with the big Lazy Susan in the middle as well. And
anyone else in the family vegan aside from Paula?
No, but they're not adverse to it, and and they tend to try to eat as much in that direction as maybe more than maybe a lot of people, I would think, in Kuwait, because there's, you know, they spend a lot of time in the United States, and they have a big apartment here, and they all were graduated at college here, or London. One daughter is in London. So the burger recipe, though, was a huge hit. It had everything but the kitchen sink in it, but it had tempeh in it as well, so I used chickpeas instead because it had a similar texture. So
sure.
I just served Paula 2 days ago the burger with the tempeh in it. So she wanted some in the freezer, and she wanted some in the refrigerator, and it's just a wonderful burger. But oh my goodness, it has rice and the beans, and I mean, it truly, tofu and mushroom. I mean, it has every, truly, it is a huge list. But I adapted it from a New York Times vegetable burger from, oh my goodness, I think it's 3 years ago now, Melissa Clark's. And I kind of doctored it up a little bit myself. It also has barbecue sauce in it and a little liquid smoke. And, I mean, I've got to give it to you. You've got to try
it. Okay, you can make it for me sometime.
Okay. And then, strangely, the most popular class that I thought would have the least interest was healthy soups, salads, and dressings. I thought, you know, I put that in there, and I thought, well, maybe I should just add a soup to one of the other classes, or, you know, I thought no one's going to want, that turned out to be the most popular one. And then one of Paula's daughters, Bibi, said, well, I just thought about what would I utilize the most? Like, what would I be more likely to want to make every day, or something to think about? And for her, it was soup, salads, and dressings.
Yeah, I think, too, when people think about soup and salad and dressings, when they're not comfortable in the kitchen or that creative, it's boring.
Yeah.
And well, they want to know what they can do that's different.
And soup, to me, I think it's the most creative thing, because to get the flavors right, and in Virgin Vegan, I have, you know, there's two Virgin Vegans out, but mine is the Meatless Guide to Pleasing Your Palate, and of course with my name on it. One of the most popular recipes in there is a creamy red lentil soup with cashew nut cream. And it is delicious. And I just use a bouillon cube, like a Rapunzel bouillon cube, because it had, with herbs and salt, it has so much flavor in itself. And I like it better than making my own broth even. I like it better than buying a vegetable broth. It's just, and of course it's the easiest thing to do. So I made that, and that was a big hit. Then I was going to do innovative meat alternatives, but I ended up doing that parts of that class just for the cooks. And I did make the unribs with barbecue sauce, again from Miyako, and one of her recipes. And what a success. I even, because we were taking a little side trip to Dubai, I realized that the leftover it was really a, you know, seitan, beefy type seitan with barbecue sauce wasn't going to last. And I somehow didn't want to freeze it. So I gave it to the helpers. I said, please take it back to the kitchen and at the palace and let the cooks taste it along with the chef there. And they told me later that they just gave them the platter and they all ate it thinking it was really beef. They really did not know, because I ended up making a mistake. I have to tell Miyako when I see her, you're supposed to use 2 cups, I think it was, of vital gluten flour.
Yep.
And we got to talking and missed. I only put 1 cup in. So it got a lot more spongy. It was almost like a brisket, that very soft beef that it would be. But this strong barbecue sauce, I use Candle 79's barbecue sauce that I have also in Virgin Vegan at their permission. And they just loved it. And, I mean, I did too. To me, it was the best meat alternative I've actually ever tasted. And I've hardly ever made seitan in my life, again, because we're so spoiled here in New York City. You just pull it off the shelf. But I've made this again, and each time I only put half the flour in.
That's really good to know. You'll have to make the recipe twice, one your new way and one Miyoko's way, and see which one you like better.
Yeah, and then you could make this. I made the chicken version one before I left, and it got very, very stiff and chewy, and then I thought, I even made a mental note, and she mentions in the recipe that if it gets too chewy, you know, then you know the next time to use less flour. Well, I don't use just less flour. I used half less. And it wasn't my plan, you know. So when I did the recipe again while I was still there, I just used half the recipe. Then I did creative dairy alternatives, and the cheeses, oh, my goodness, the feta, chèvre, ricotta, two different chèvres. I rolled one in za'atar, which is a Middle Eastern spice.
Yes, I love that. You know I love that.
Yeah, za'atar, za'atar. They use it so much there. Paula told me how the kids had grown up there with just putting it on their toast in the morning, too.
Yep.
And so, so I decided to roll one of the chèvre, well, I cut it in half, the log of chèvre that I made, I cut it in half, and I put half of it in the za'atar, and then I rolled half in finely diced parsley and chives. And so those were a great hit. And I did ricotta. I did Matthew Kenny's recipe. He sent it to me himself that he serves in his restaurants and teaches in his raw culinary schools. The lemon ricotta, and then I had eaten in 00, his pizza place down on 2nd Avenue and 4th Street, and he serves a smoky ricotta with one of the pizzas, and I thought, my goodness, how could I make that smoky ricotta? And I emailed him, and I didn't hear back, but I also then learned that he was in Australia or something, and I guess anyway, I thought, well, how could I make that work? I said, okay, smoky, a little liquid smoke. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, but it looked very salmon color when I was having it at the restaurant. And so I thought, well, a little tomato paste. Don't you know it worked perfectly? And it turned out to be Paula's favorite.
Wow.
And that's I just great. Made all these cheeses for her here, including a gorgonzola that I had not made in Kuwait. I learned to make it once I got back. So I just gave her all of those on 2 days ago, and she emailed me to say half of them are gone. She's eaten half of them already. So, but here's the thing. When I was there, I was in what I call the cookhouse. It was just a location, not on the property, but about 5 minutes away by car. I just referred to it as a cookhouse. It was a very, very nice house that had a large kitchen where we could do these classes. And she phoned me, and she said, can you please create a cheese board? My friend from Paris is here visiting, and she refuses to believe that you could ever, ever have cheese made out of nuts. And, of course, with the feta, I used almonds, Miyoko. Mm-hmm. I used most of these recipes are from Miyoko, not all of them. You know, I mentioned Matthew Kenny, too. The chèvre was from macadamias, and the ricotta was from almonds also. And then I did Matthew's aged cashew cheese, and I flavored it with garlic and dill weed, which... you could flavor it any way you want. Let your mind go crazy. So I made this cheese board of about seven different cheeses. And the driver came and got it and took it back to the palace. And I hadn't heard because she took the platter home with her. Well, the next day or day after, she came to one of the lunches I told you about earlier. And she went on and on about the cheese in her very thick French accent. She said, had nobody told me that this wasn't cheese from the cow or the goat or whatever, I would have never known.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I keep trying to tell everybody that, yes, I'm eating cheese made from nuts, and it tastes just like cheese. And she said, nobody believes me.
Right. They will.
Yeah. And yeah. Then the last class was decadent desserts. And, of course, I had to make Fran Costigan's chocolate cake to live for with the chocolate ganache. And I had to make it more.
Which she's made so many times for you.
6 years in a row. And then this past year, my birthday is December 14th. I got back on the 8th, and she was gone. She had a trip and wasn't going to get back until the day after my birthday, I think, whatever it was. Anyway, I had to make my own cake this year, but I made it because I can't be without it. It's as though my birthday hasn't happened if I don't have Fran Costigan's chocolate cake. It's got to be. So... I swear, if I would happen to die some year on my birthday, I want everyone to have Fran Costigan's chocolate cake to live for on my birthday in celebration. I don't want any funeral. I don't want any, you know, I just have the cake and celebrate me. So then I also made ice creams, and they just loved them. I made one with churned. I made a pumpkin pie ice cream, and then I made a golden milk ice cream, as they call it. You know, you can make that golden milk with cardamom and turmeric and things. But I made it into an ice cream. Then I made an unchurned chocolate ice cream, and some options for flavoring additionally. I was so tempted for peanut butter because there's nothing in life I love any more than those two flavors together. But it mentioned espresso, and so here I was, the helpers every day, there was a class, had this elaborate coffee and tea service set up for everybody, and it was Arabic coffee, Arabic tea, regular American coffee, and espresso. And so I thought, oh, the espresso, we have espresso right here. So I made it chocolate espresso. Oh, my goodness, it went over. Everybody loved it so much. And that was an unchurned one because I wanted them to know that you can make ice cream even if you don't have a machine.
That's right. Easy.
Yeah, and something other than a frozen banana in a blender, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
Anyway, I could go on and on. It was just so much fun. And then they do have a vegan restaurant. And two people who came have restaurants there. That I thought was lovely, too, because they know the growing interest. There's
mm-hmm.
a big diabetes and heart issue there because of obesity. And, I mean, almost 70% of the population, I hear, is overweight.
Wow. And is that worse than here?
Well, it's I read the statistics that I think it's 70% with men and 80% women overweight.
Wow.
There. Mm-hmm. So there's a big interest. I mean, I didn't have to convince anybody about this. They were eager to learn. They were eager to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Paula thought it would be a success, too, because she herself has, you know, been, eaten in a very plant-based focused way for so many years. And she's had to answer all these questions as well as to why she's eating this way, you know. And then they are interested. They want to know, well, how do you do it? And what do I make for lunch? What do I make for dinner? Oh, I had a lovely time. When I did the breakfast class, Paula came in, and actually she acted as the sign-in secretary the first class. It was so much fun. I took pictures of her at the entrance desk, you know, working hard for me. And so at the end of that class, I did, in version vegan, I have the chocolate-stuffed French toast. And
ooh,
so she
yeah.
said, she said, Linda, you have to make this for my two granddaughters who come every Saturday morning to spend with their grandmother. And we play spy and we play dress-ups and we always do something fun. And she said, we've got to make this together, you know, the chocolate stuff. Well, they were pure delights because, well, the palace has seven kitchens. One is one's a really big one, of course, you know, like a big industrial hotel kitchen. But then there's what they call service kitchens. But one of them is really well equipped, and it's just right upstairs from the main kitchen. And so we got that all set up. And then my two helpers that actually helped me during the classes, they saw what I was going to do, so they just automatically came up to help. And the two little girls, we put aprons on them, and so it was so cute when it came time that you had to dip the bread in the milk, cinnamon, maple syrup kind of mixture that for 10 seconds. And I said, do you know what 10 seconds are? Well, they knew the one Mississippi, the two Mississippi. And so they were just beyond adorable. And so we got the chocolate. They did it. They did the whole thing. I did nothing. I observed, you know, I think, I forget their ages quite now. I think maybe around 7 and 9, roughly, or 6 and 9, and give or take. And so that was, I felt like another class. And then there was such a nice response from the classes that, remember I told you how Paula's one daughter is a trained chef? She trained
yes.
here in New York, and the youngest graduate from a culinary school in Paris. She said, Linda, I really want you to add a class, and I just want to bring my friends. It'll just be me and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thrilled to add that class. But then that I did that the day I was supposed to leave. And Mubarak actually noticed about halfway through the month that I was just not doing anything in Kuwait. All I was doing was working. And he said, Linda, don't you think you should extend your trip? You won't even get, you won't see anything of Kuwait except the supermarket and the cookhouse
mm-hmm.
and the palace. And so I said, well, that might be a great idea. Well, it's good I did, because that gave me time then to do this extra class for Missy, and also to be there for the birth of Gigi, which was very special. Yeah, it was the information
amazing.
Is very, very much received there.
Now, you prepared all kinds of wonderful foods, and I know everyone learned quite a bit, but what would they normally serve someone who's vegan in Kuwait with some of their traditional foods?
Well, pesto is really popular, and after the first, I think I had out of the, I was there 5 weeks plus a day. After 3 weeks, I said to the young woman who was caring for me, I said, Mary Lou, I don't want you to bring me pesto for the rest of my trip. Because she couldn't think of anything else to bring me for my supper, basically, than some pasta, although it was whole wheat.
Right.
With pesto on it, along with some, I mean, I always had lots of things I could choose from. I didn't mean to say that that's all I had. But they make lovely, lots and lots of vegetable dishes. The only problem is, I remember having this beautiful carrot dish with a green in it. I'm trying to remember what the green was now. I don't know if it was, it wasn't spinach. It was something stronger than, anyway, but I was in the kitchen, at one point, and I happened to see them making it. They're not cooking it in water at all. It's all cooked in oil. Oil, and more oil.
Yeah.
And Paula said it's been her biggest challenge is to get them to understand that they don't have to be cooking with so much oil. But they think that it glistens and it looks better and it's just part of the culture. And that was because she told me that, I was then, when I had the cook's class, I was able to tell them, I said, your dishes would shine through so much more. Just use half the oil. Try using half the oil. And then maybe cut back to a quarter, and your dishes would be even better. And I saw the one cook, he was the oldest cook in the class, and by oldest I mean maybe he was in his 50s, and I could see him shaking his head like, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. And the rest were just kind of listening, but I couldn't miss his, he kind of got it, you know, he could see it.
And you have to go back and do a no oil class.
Yeah, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, no oil
yep.
cooking. And so when I would eat at the luncheons, you know, I would say to Paul, I said, I see what you mean. The oil is just, they just don't know how else basically to cook. And but I would say, and I gave them, I passed around. We did Dr. Furman's, about six of his no-oil salad dressings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not the ones that you buy from him, but I mean, we actually made them there. And then I passed the platter with things they could dunk into it, you know, like a little piece of bread or a cracker or I forget. I think one day it was a few pieces of celery, whatever, so that they could taste each one of them. And I didn't tell any of them until the very end that, did you notice there's no oil in the salad dressings?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
whoa!
And they all had their idea which one they liked the best. And then I served them a whole Caesar salad and made the parm, parm out of sesame seeds and nutritional yeast, and which I had given my friend Paula, I think it was last year or so, and she always wanted to take bags back to Kuwait. And, of course, when I was there, I made one out of walnuts, but I also said, or cashews, I mean. And I also told him, I said, you know, you could make it with walnuts too, just a stronger flavor, so just be thinking about what you're making it with. And they loved that. In fact, the one person came in the next class, she said, I made that Caesar salad for my family, and nobody noticed that there was no oil in the dressing, and that wasn't, you know, and they said they loved it, was so flavorful. And they had I call it parm sprinkle, but you could call it whatever you want. It's just a Parmesan substitute.
Do they have nutritional yeast there, or does Paula bring it from the States?
They had it at one place. And it was in the organic section of one of the Sultan markets, as I told you, but we had to go into the center of Kuwait for it. And but otherwise, there was another place, a supermarket that looked rather new to me. I forget the name of it now. Save, S-A-V-E, I think is in the title. But nonetheless, I walked in, and they had just gotten Daya products in.
Wow.
And I think some Tofutti products, too. But I couldn't get over. I was in such shock to see the day of products. And so I quickly bought a lot of them, because even though I was going to teach them how to make some of it anyway, I thought it would be nice to, for them to see a store-bought mayo or a store-bought cheese or a store-bought, you know, just what you know, how it compared. And I just forget now what all I got that was already ready-made. And then they had an organic section as well. So it was interesting. And they were super inquisitive about coconut oil and the difference between virgin oil and the refined coconut oil. And I explained to them that the refined has the odor removed. Mm-hmm. And then someone said, oh, yes, but that's probably chemically or whatever. And they were so relieved to find out that, no, it's done by steam, and it's just fine. It's not, you know, adding any problems to anything. And I don't know if you know Carla Hall, who's on The Chew. It's a TV show here around noontime.
I don't.
It has chefs on it, you know, Mario Batali and Michael Simon and Dr. Oz's daughter. And anyway, I was looking in the supermarket for coconut oil, and I could not believe the only refined coconut oil I could find was one that had Carla Hall's face on it. And somehow she got her face on the refined coconut oil in Kuwait. And I took so many pictures of the shelf, and, you know, and of course I bought a whole ton of it to take for the classes and to leave in the palace. And and she lives in my area here. I see her on the street every now and then. I can hardly wait. I've never had a conversation with her, but we have said hello. And so I can hardly wait to run into her the next time, because I'm going to pull my phone out and say, you're big in Kuwait.
Yeah, she probably doesn't even realize. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about oil. I think it's a really good point that you brought up. And
yes.
And we need to educate more about it. I remember when I lived in France in the early 90s, and I was a vegan then, and I was always very grateful when people would invite me over and make meals for me, but everything was always swimming in olive oil. And I wasn't even that aware then about how unhealthy oil is. But I could, it was just way too much just in taste and whatever. And people just weren't they're used to eating so much oil.
Right.
And when you talk about the diabetes problem, that has to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah. And when I came back on the airlines, the Kuwaiti Airlines, we were so few people in the airplane, so everybody in the whole airplane had at least 3 or 4 seats they could stretch out on. It was quite amazing. But they had 2 people that were bedridden that they brought on gurneys and set it up over several seats and put a tent around it, because it's very common. They come here to the United States for treatment, and one of the 2 was severely obese and dying of, I think it was obesity. I wasn't able to really, I didn't feel polite quizzing too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the man who sat across the aisle from me, I noticed he kept getting up and getting a cooler out of the one closet, and we started talking, and here it turned out that he has diabetes. And he was a rather refined man. He was definitely overweight. And we ended up chatting and talking and became so friendly through the entire trip. And so I was able to tell him all these things and what sites to look on. And I told him to see Forks Over Knives film, and told him to look up Dr. Furman's books and Dr. Barnard's, and the whole,
yep.
all of the wonderful books out there about reversing diabetes, and along with that is reversing heart disease. And I asked him to go on and look at my videos, because, you know, we should mention the 49 videos I did in connection to Virgin Vegan. you go on YouTube and you just put in the search box, Virgin Vegan Linda Long, you and I did a wonderful video.
I remember. On a windy day in the plaza of Lincoln Center.
And it was so informative, though, Karen, to talk about your overcoming advanced ovarian. And, I mean, it was just so inspiring. But I also interviewed Russell Simmons and Heather Mills and even my doorman, who was a walking time bomb. And he was so scared, and he was going to have surgery on his knee and was going to be out for 3 months. And he caught me the day before he left for 3 months and said, "You know, Miss Long, you've been talking to me so long about proper eating. I'm going to be off for 3 months. I think I could actually do it." So I went to Fairway and got him. His name is Steve Rush, and I did a video with him, and it's on that YouTube. It is, again, Virgin Vegan Linda Long, and all 49 will come up. But if you know the name of Karen Hartglass or Russell Simmons or Heather Mills or Dr. Barnard or Dr. Clapper, I so encourage, please, the best on dairy is Dr. Michael Clapper's interview I did with him. Then, of course, it was also the athletes, you know, Brendan Brazier and Rich Roll and so on. But anyway,
your doorman. How did he fare?
Thank you. I drew a complete blank. I got off on another limb of the tree I was climbing. And I gave him a bag of groceries, and I got his email, and I wrote it all down on the email as to what I wanted him to do with this bag of groceries so that his wife could read it too. And 3 months went by. I even lost track how long he'd been out. And suddenly I heard him coming across the lobby shouting my name. And he said, "I have something to tell you." He said, "I went to the doctor because I had to go because we're, you know, member of the union. You've got to have approval to come back to work." And they did my blood pressure and my blood and everything. And then they called me the next 2 days later and said, "You've got to come back. We think that there's a problem." And so he got so scared. And he went back, and the nurse took his one arm blood pressure, and she said, "Well, let me try the other arm." And she took the other arm, and then she said, "Okay, you can go into the doctor." And she followed him in, and all the years she's never come in to the doctor's office with him. And he said, "That's when I really got scared." And he said, "My head just jerked up to see that she was still standing there," and she could see that he was concerned, and she said, "Oh, no, I've just got to hear this." And so the doctor looks at him and says, "What have you been doing, Steve?" Now this, when I say a walking time bomb, this fellow's, I never heard of numbers this high for blood pressure and cholesterol.
Wow.
I didn't even know you could still be walking around and not have a stroke. And this guy is 38 years old.
Mm.
Well, he's 35 at the time. And so the doctor, he said, "Well, I have this lady in my building, you know, she's vegan, and over this, you're not going to believe what the doctor did." And here Steve is so excited to tell me this, and when he gets to this part I'm about to tell you, his shoulders drop and his eyes fall to the floor, and he said to me with a frown, big frown on his face, "What are you, a vegan now?"
Wow.
Now, this is a guy that hadn't been able to help this man, even took out his gallbladder 2 years before.
What a story. Linda, that's an incredible story and a great story to end on because we're out of time.
That's okay.
So that's very inspiring. And, you know, we've heard so many of those and we can never, ever hear enough. But thank you so much for taking the time and joining me today and sharing your tales from Kuwait. And all the wonderful work you're doing to make people healthy with delicious food. Thank you again so much.
Okay, I'm making my burgers for you as soon as you're back.
Okay, I'm hurrying. Take care and thank you so much. Linda Long,
thanks.
Author of Great Chefs Cook Vegan and Virgin Vegan.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, we have like just a minute left or two, and I wanted to mention before we go, there's a website from my friend Marla Rose, and it's called veganstreet.com, and they've just launched a vegan street guide for new vegans. It's really adorable, and I told her I would give a shout out about it, so go to veganstreet.com. They've got a lot of fun things up on that website. All right, that's the end of the hour, so thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Karen Hartglass. We just listened to the lovely Linda Long. Visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com for more wonderful recipes and my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, and have a delicious week. Thank you.